WLIW-FM In Conversation, our special program that brings you dynamic voices from across our region and beyond.
Welcome to WLIW-FM In Conversation. I'm your host, Diane Michelli, General Manager of WLIW-FM, and joining me is East End resident, author, and investor Howard Marks, co-chairman of Oak Tree Capital Management, a global investment firm, and a funder here at WLIW-FM. Thank you for joining us, Howard.
Pleasure to be with you, Diane.
Thank you. So let's start with the economy, which was a big driver in the recent election. What do you see moving forward?
I think the U.S. economy is functioning quite well. I think it's the best functioning economy in the world. Of course, our economy is often interconnected with others. So when they don't do great, it's hard for us to do great. But we are performing well and better than the others. You know, China ostensibly has a higher growth rate, but of course, it's still catching up with the developed world in terms of progress. But we grow much better than Europe and Japan, which are our main comparisons. I don't see areas of excess in our economy. You don't see overbuilding, too much inventory creation. You don't see a labor market that's too tight. It's excesses that necessitate later corrections. So I don't see that today. So, you know, there's no reason to think we're going to be in recession soon. It's always a possibility if the spirit so moves consumers. But if we were to have a recession soon, I don't think it would necessarily be a serious one. I just think we're okay. We're in the middle ground of economic performance. And sometimes people might say, well, I wish it was really hot. When it's hot, then it can go cold. Right now, the status quo, I think, is very desirable.
So what do you see as the impact of what you just described, the current economic state on the East End and across Long Island and our whole region?
Well, the economic progress is not exceptional, which means that there are some do better than others. And, you know, one of the basic principles governing the 21st century has been better outcomes for people who are educated and professional, and worse outcomes for others. We had in the 20th century, in the latter half of the 20th century, post-war, we had this great rising tide that lifted all boats, both within the U.S. and all around the world. And basically, everybody did better. Some did better than others, but everybody did better. Growth has moderated in the 21st century, and it's not lifting all boats as strongly. And so we have uneven outcomes, and especially with regard to the people with better educations and more professional employment do better than others. And of course, the people with capital have done exceptionally well, and the people who don't have capital have not.
So what advice would you give for local businesses and residents so that they can grow and prosper in this current economic environment?
Well, I'm not really an advisor to businesses. I've never run a business other than my own in the investment business. But I think that times are essentially normal in that regard, in the sense that, you know, keep at it, do it as well as you can, take reasonable chances. I don't think that things are so bad that one has to hunker down and go into a shell. I also don't think it's some incredibly buoyant environment, which means throw caution to the wind and just go for it. Middle ground, take reasonable risks thoughtfully. And if you have a superior service, a superior product, a superior delivery system, you know, I think the U.S. and local economy will permit you to succeed. But, you know, you have to have some edge that'll make you successful. And then you have to do the everyday blocking and tackling very well. To me, the main strategic choice in our actions is always the question is, should we be more aggressive than usual or more defensive than usual? And at the present time, I don't think either of those. I just think steady as you go.
So your firm, Oak Tree Capital, just closed on its largest distressed debt fund ever with $16 billion. What's the significance of that in today's marketplace?
It's not a commentary on today, Diane. You know, the U.S. capital markets are very large and rapidly growing. They supply businesses and real estate entrepreneurs, developers with money for their projects. There's been a vast expansion in the amount of debt in our economy, along with the general expansion of the size of the economy. But everybody's using debt now to finance their activities in good measure. And guess what? When you make 100 loans, they don't all pay off. So, you know, we've been in the business since 1988 of investing in funds designed to deal with the people who don't prosper. That's what we call distressed debt. And the people who don't pay their debts on time and so forth. And no matter how good the environment is, there are always some of those. Then when the environment weakens, of course, there are more of those. But that's what we do. But I wouldn't take that dollar figure, you know, as a statement about predicting bad things ahead.
So one of the hallmarks of your more than 25 years with Oak Tree Capital is the memo by Howard Marks, which details your investment strategies and insights into the economy, posted on the Oak Tree website. And in fact, it was exactly 25 years ago in January when you published the first memo entitled Bubble.com. And for the anniversary, you revisited that subject with a new memo titled On Bubble Watch. Tell us about the latest bubble memo and how things have evolved in this area over 25 years.
Well, let me clarify that a little bit.
Okay.
It's the 25th anniversary of the first memo that got some attention. I wrote for 10 years before I ever had a response. So I started writing memos in 90, but I got I wrote the first one that had a response in 2000. And that, as you say, was bubble.com because, you know, the dot-com era had dawned and everybody was agog over anything related to the internet or e-commerce or telecom or tech. And we had a vast, vast rise in the stock market. The stock, the S&P 500 stock index rose 20% a year throughout the 90s, which is probably, I'm sure it's the best decade in history. And it rose so high that it seemed like a bubble. I put out a memo called, as you say, bubble.com, January the 2nd of 2000. And then I thought it was timely to follow that up on January the 2nd, 2025, for the 25th anniversary, with another memo on the same topic, on Bubble Watch. And, you know, everybody's always on the lookout for a bubble because they don't want to suffer when it ends. And so that's the topic of the memo. And, you know, the stock market has done very well for the last 2.25 years. And certain stocks, there's a group of stocks called the Magnificent Seven. They're the seven largest components of the S&P 500, to which there are 500 components. Those seven out of the 500, so just over 1%, account for 40-some-odd% of the whole index. They're enormously overweighted and influential. And they've done exceptionally well, dragging the whole index with them. The rest of the index hasn't done so well. And they're exciting companies, you know, like ranging from Microsoft, Amazon, to NVIDIA, which makes chips, which are essential in AI. So they are the thing that have been captivating the market. And usually when the market does well, that's fertile ground for certain, what I call super stocks, to do really well. And that's what happened. So now everybody wants to know if the S&P is in a bubble, the stock market in general, and specifically whether the Magnificent Seven are. And that's the subject of the memo. I want to mention here for your listeners that all my memos are available at oaktreecapital.com. And under the heading of Insights, and you can read the old ones, you can subscribe to the new ones, and I affirmatively assert that the price is right because they're free. And I'd love to have my fellow EastEnders read along. But I basically say in there that that things are high, but it's not a bubble. So it's not as worried as you would be if you thought it was a bubble. What do I mean? And what I basically say is that there are two components, two broad components to a bubble. One is high prices. And you can argue that some of these things are highly priced. On the other hand, there, as I understand it, I'm not an expert because I don't invest in the stock market or in technology. These are wonderful companies. It's not, even though they're expensive, it's not arguable, it's not clear that they're too expensive. You know, it's kind of like a Rolls Royce. It's a very expensive car, but it's a great car. And so it's, you can't be sure that it's too expensive. So anyway, but these things, you know, there are metrics we look at to see whether something is high priced or not. And the main one is called the price earnings ratio, PE ratio. It's the ratio of the price of a share to the company's average earnings for a share. You take all the earnings, you divide by the number of shares outstanding, you get the earnings per share, you put divide that into the price, and you get the price to earnings ratio. And the price to earnings ratios on the Magnificent Seven or on the S&P as a whole are high relative to the norms, but not crazy. That's my bottom line. Again, reminding everybody that I'm not an expert on the specific matter. There's another important component in a bubble, and that's a psychological or emotional one. And I personally don't have reason to believe that that is present. So I've lived through a number of significant bubbles. I came into this business in September of 69, when the world was nutty about the so-called Nifty 50, the 50 best and fastest growing companies in America, Xerox, IBM, Kodak, Polaroid, Merck, Lilly, etc. And that was a mania. I saw it again in 99. The internet e-commerce bubble, mania. I don't think there's a mania today. There's enthusiasm, there's optimism, there's positivism. You might say that optimism is dominating the environment today. I wouldn't argue with that, but I don't think it's nutty. And if this is I don't know if you've noticed, but that's not a scientific judgment. But, you know, the point is, in 69 and in 99, what people said was, these are such great companies, there's no price too high. And so I define a bubble as a temporary mania, when people just stop applying reason and rationality to what they do. And I don't see that today. The prices are high, people discuss the fairness of the price, but I don't see anybody saying, you know, there's no price too high. This psychological requirement for the presence of a bubble, in my opinion, is not present. On the other hand, the great thing about investing, one of the reasons it's so much fun, is these things are not cut and dried. There's always another hand. On the other hand, if you go back 3 weeks, I think it was it January 26th, maybe, and the news came out that a Chinese company called DeepSeek would upset the outlook in the AI business, and NVIDIA, which serves the AI industry, was down a sixth that day. So there is certainly some element of it being precarious. It's certainly not, you know, as they say, for widows and orphans.
This is WLIWFM In Conversation. I'm your host, Diane Michelli, speaking with East End resident, author, and investor Howard Marks, co-chairman of Oak Tree Capital Management. So you also recently wrote a memo to your Oak Tree clients called Thinking on the Road. You talked earlier at the top of our interview about how our economy is interconnected with many others around the world. And you heard questions and you have reflections on your business encounters during your recent travels through the Middle East and Asia. Tell us what you heard and your bottom line reflections.
Well, I think the most relevant one, Diane, is I was in Asia on election day. And then, as you say, I completed that trip and shortly later went on to the Middle East. And I think, obviously, the main thing people wanted to talk about was Trump and the implications. And my bottom line on that subject is simple. We don't know. When we think about the future, most people deal with the future by coming up with a forecast, what they think will happen. I believe there are two things you need. The first is a forecast of what you think will happen. And the second is a reasoned opinion on the probability that you're right. Those are two different things. So if you say, will it be hot this summer? I will say, it could be hot. I'm probably right. If you say, will it rain tomorrow? I say, I think it will, and I think I'm right. But there are other things that are more uncertain. And I think that the Trump administration will veer off in so many directions and will do so many things that can't necessarily be anticipated. And some of them will be rolled back, and some of them will be prevented, and some of them will go through, and the ramifications aren't always fully anticipatable. So I just think we live in an uncertain world today, an unusually uncertain world in terms of the political and government environment. That has ramifications for all of us. And as you asked before about the local business owner, it has ramifications for them. You know, when the future is unclear, I think the biggest mistake you can make is act as if it's clear. And, you know, Mark Twain had many very, very smart things attributed to him. One of the greatest was his pointing out, he said, it's not what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for certain that just ain't true. So we all deal with a lot of uncertainty every day in our lives and in our businesses and in many arenas. And that's not debilitating in itself. If we accept and admit and allow and acknowledge that we don't know, we can deal with uncertainty. The biggest mistake you can do is to, in an uncertain world, to believe that you know what's going to happen and bet strongly on it. And what I'm saying is that the world in this regard is more uncertain than usual. And I just wouldn't bet heavily. And that's the way you have to accept the environment we live in today, and uncertain.
You mentioned Mark Twain. You also are a writer. Any new book ideas on the horizon?
You know, I had a couple of weeks in the Hamptons at year end, and I thought I would start on a new one. And then other things, more timely, intervened, and I never did. But one of these days, I want to write another. You know, I've written two books so far, and I've gotten a lot out of it. People like them, and when people tell me they like them, I'm a sucker for encouragement. And I'd like to write a third one, and I'm planning a book about how I view life. People have heard enough from me about investing. I'd like to talk about some bigger topics, and all I need is the time.
So we all need some time. But beyond business, you and your wife, Nancy, who also is an author and an artist, support and focus many of your efforts on issues like education, good writing skills, the arts, and philanthropy throughout the East End. As an East End resident, along with your wife, what are some of the organizations that you support, including you do support WLIWFM, which we're very grateful for? What are some of the other local organizations and issues that you and Nancy support on the East End and are important to you?
Well, as you say, WLIW is important to me, and it enriches my life, and I feel like I'm doing some good by supporting it. And I'll put two other organizations in that category. One is called The Church. It is a de-sanctified church in Sag Harbor that became available, and some friends of mine, artists Eric Fischel and April Gornick, took it over and turned it into a cultural center. And it has exhibitions, lectures, workshops, and it's just a great way to spend time. And I'm very happy to be on the board there. And I think it's a great organization, and people can come and enjoy it and have their eyes open. And of course, Sag Harbor is a wonderful place. The other is the Peconic Land Trust. And Peconic Land Trust, basically, you know, the way I describe it is that out in the East End, we have a special place in terms of the character and the beauty. And it is the way it is because some people had the foresight to say that it's not going to stay this way by itself. There's something called progress. And progress usually is associated with some deterioration, or certainly a change in the environment. And we want to keep it the way it is. So the Peconic Land Trust tries to make sure that the land is preserved and given to good uses, and in particular, that farmland is not lost from farming. So it tries to find the money and the way to get ownership of farmland, and then with legal protection, turn it over to people who will farm it. And in the process, develop some future farmers who otherwise may not do it. So I think these are two great organizations, and they're professionally run, big enough to make a difference, but small enough for the individual donor like me to feel like that he's making a difference. And I think they're both terrific, along with your station.
Well, thank you, Howard and Nancy, of course, too, for all of your support for all of the organizations that you work with across the East End and across our region, and for joining us today. Thank you, Howard.
Thank you for asking your good questions, Diane.
I've been speaking with East End resident, author, and investor Howard Marks, co-chairman of Oak Tree Capital Management, a global investment firm, and a funder of WLIWFM. More episodes of WLIWFM in Conversation are available on the WLIWFM app at wliw.org/radio and your favorite streaming platforms, including YouTube. And follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads, WLIWFM. I'm your host, Diane Michelli, General Manager of WLIWFM. Thanks for joining us for this latest episode of WLIWFM in Conversation.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of WLIWFM in Conversation, our special program that brings you dynamic voices from across our region and beyond.